My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And welcome to another edition of Spits and Suds, the off-season edition. Once again, I'm Gavin Spittle of 105.3 The Fan. Kudos to each and every one of you. For July, we are matching regular season numbers when the Stars are playing, and that's because we have the best podcast listeners in DFW. And joining us tonight is, if we had a Spits and Suds Hall of Fame, similar to Brendan Morrow getting inducted and Jim Leitz getting inducted, I think this guy might make the first ballot. It's David Castillo of D Magazine. How are you tonight, buddy?
I was good until that intro, and then the intro just kind of soured me, and I'm like, Hall of, come on, man. I'm the dregs of Dallas Stars coverage.
You might get in the third year, but you'd get in.
Who's the guy that they keep screwing over? Is it McGillney? Is that?
I thought you were talking Stars Hall of Fame.
Oh, if only.
Yeah. Yeah. McGillney is certainly a good one. Boy, there are a couple others that just kind of frustrate me.
Am I the only one that is not a huge fan of sort of, granted, I've never listened to this conversation outside. This is complete neophyte sort of impressions, but Hall of Fames for just the team, I've never been like huge on it. I think the UFC did something kind of similar with, what do they do? I mean, UFC does like their own Hall of Fame that's like just pure trash. I'm not too big on that. Is that strange, or is that like, you know?
No, I think what it is, it's a very interesting discussion. I think the reason the Stars did it is because it does, and this is why I'll give a stick tap to Brad Alberts, it does allow you to celebrate those players in your team history if you're going to have a strict policy where you're not going to retire numbers. Like Brendan Morrow is not going to make the NHL Hall of Fame, but clearly, you know, he's one of those stars that a lot of people gravitate to as far as, man, I loved it when Brendan Moran played. He was tough. He scored goals, just a captain. You know, that allows him to be celebrated in Stars folklore. So for those reasons, I like it. You know, a guy like Jim Leitz, who's been with the organization for a long time, you know, he deserves it as well. Let's hope that Craig Ludwig can get in the next few years, because I think he deserves it.
I think Shinstats deserve it. As far as the player itself, that's another story. But yeah, and I don't want to come off as a purist. What I would say is that I think you raise a great point. And honestly, like, I just hadn't really thought about it because I hadn't really thought about it in general. I always just think in terms of, if you are a player that is historically significant to your position, that's where I think, you know, Hall of Fame. But, you know, if outside of your team, you weren't all that, in contrast, I'm kind of like, I tend to be a little sort of rigid in that way. But as far as like growing the game and like kind of creating that own like sort of franchise history and the sort of the mythos building that, I think it's really cool. And so, yeah, I guess I think maybe you brought me to the other side. The more positive.
Alex McGillney is a good one. What about Rod Brind'Amour? 1,184 points, almost 1,500 games played.
But you look at some of the other players that would be ahead of him. Like, Brind'Amour was one of my favorite players. The Flyers were one of my favorite teams when they were led by Eric Lindros. That was one of, believe it or not, Philly and Toronto, one of two teams that really got me into hockey. And Lindros just being a wrecking machine, but also like just supernaturally talented. One of the things that got me into it, and of course, Brind'Amour would later become part of those teams, and brilliant two-way center. But I would say no. I think there has to be a little something extra. Yeah, he won a cup later with Carolina, but I don't know. I haven't really thought about what constitutes like solid Hall of Famer profile, I guess. And that's why I'm not the analysis that you think I am, Gavin.
No. Oh, well, I mean, let's start there then. The latest Hall of Fame class is Jeremy Roenick. Well-deserved, overdue. Pavel Datsyuk, he is one of the slickest players I've ever seen in person. Shea Weber, deadly slap shot from the point. Also a tough defenseman. Natalie Darwitz, Chrissy Wendell Pohl.
Shea Weber made it?
I believe so, yeah.
I wasn't asking like rhetorical. I was just
like, now you got me questioning.
It's just like for me, like a superb.
Yeah, Shea Weber made it.
Okay, all right.
Goodness. Well, I bring that up because you brought it up. So, Joe Pavelski, is he a Hall of Famer?
I would say yeah. I think there are so many different dimensions to Pavelski's game.
Agreed.
And it's the kind of thing that I'm so glad to finally do, because all throughout the season I was just down on Pavelski. Blah, blah, blah. You know, defense is not there. Yeah, the points are. And like, I felt bad because I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to criticize Pavelski. But if you look, like, the other thing too is that the way Pavelski essentially had his most productive seasons ever in the twilight of his career is also something that I don't expect to ever see replicated. I'm trying to think, like, who is in the, maybe like Crosby, but I don't think he's had anywhere close to the seasons that he had in his prime. And so in addition to just like the Pavelski, or the history itself that Pavelski's kind of created, you'd be hard pressed to like think of a more unique profile than his, a player that, you know, what was it, seventh round? Was he undrafted? I can never remember.
Yeah, it was late round. Yeah.
Yeah, late round. No real like explicit skills other than just his wits and just one of the best American born players ever. And yeah.
I agree. I think he definitely gets in. Heck of a run for Joe Pavelski.
Also a great playoff performer historically.
Well, and this is going to be interesting. If Joe Pavelski does get in, do the Stars raise the banner?
No. I don't. Do they? I mean, that would seem.
I'm working on having Brad Albertson. And one of the things I want to ask Brad about, among many things, because I think he's done a terrific job as president of the Stars. They have the game overseas. He brought the outdoor classic, the Winter Classic here, the NHL draft here. So many things with Brad Alberts. And one of the things that I kind of want specific information on is the criteria for raising a banner in the rafters, because you do have Hall of Fame players that did make major impacts for the organization, albeit tenure was not one of them. And I'm talking about Ed Belfour, who is in the Hockey Hall of Fame. They don't win the Stanley Cup without Ed Belfour and Brett Hull as well.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like in that context, it's just if Pavelski had won a cup with Dallas, you'd have like a case, but it's just, it's hard to like, I think at that point, like the question then is really about like, well, if he gets in, like who else qualifies? Like, is that,
well, everyone has Jamie Benn going up.
Oh, man, am I just like a curmudgeon when it comes to this stuff? I
don't disagree with you there. It's like, okay, that's why I just want to find out. I'm not pro or against. I personally would love to see Ed Belfour go up. I think he's meant a ton for this organization. That would be my next one. But what I'm saying is that, so we're putting Jamie Benn in, raising the banner based on his tenure with the Stars, his captaincy with the Stars, but there's no Stanley Cups. There's no Hockey Hall of Fame. So, you know, that those are just questions for the future.
Okay. So like if I'm building, I guess the way to think of just kind of use the sort of Mount Rushmore rubric, right? And if I'm thinking about like I can't even list like four players that I would argue are sort of, to me, it's like I think of like Mike Modano and like Sergei Zubov, and those are like the two guys that like come immediately to mind. If I'm thinking about my Rushmore, and then I'm kind of like there's guys in the middle like Yuri Lehtinen, but if I'm looking at like the modern day roster and like I'm only allowed four, I'm probably looking at like Miro Heiskanen as part of that Rushmore.
Yeah,
and I'm just like there should only be like a limited number of spots, but. I don't know. Like, I don't think that Ben specifically has been a great player and the captain of the team. And he's a unique player within that. Love his style, love his, you know, sort of physicality. But I just, there has to be, to me, there has to be something that's historic connecting you to the franchise beyond just tenure. And I don't know if like Ben necessarily has that.
I agree. No, I think that's fair. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out. He's the man that always takes me off topic. He's David Castillo. You can sign up for his Substack called Star Stack, where he brings you the latest information.
Which has a Twitter account, by the way, now.
Oh, nice. Very nice. Very nice. Also want to say, make sure you check out D Magazine. Is it tomorrow, sir?
Yes, should be tomorrow. I'll be talking about the blue line and why I think that the blue line is going to be fine.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a hot take.
And as we say on Spits and Suds, anytime one of our guys is putting an article out, please support them. It really, really helps. And kudos to D Magazine for all their efforts as far as the hockey articles that they have and they continue to push out. So kudos to them. All right. The news we wanted to talk about today is Brock Faber, Minnesota native, goes home in a trade, performs well for the Minnesota Wild. Today signs an 8-year, $68 million contract. That's the max you can sign. Stick tap to Brock Faber. But at the same time, David, as soon as that deal came out, I said, oh, wow, what does that mean for Thomas Harley? Could you compare the players for us and what your thoughts are as far as, do you think that the Stars should go out and get Harley on a Brock Faber deal, or are we talking maybe a bridge deal for Harley?
You're definitely looking at more of a bridge deal. I mean, the thing that, for those that haven't seen Brock Faber, I mean, this is a defenseman that was kind of more or less in the discussion for the Calder because he was just playing so many minutes as a rookie and actually crushing those minutes. Like, I mean, everybody, like Stars fans, can understand that sort of sensation of when you have a rookie defenseman who may not necessarily have the gaudy point totals, may not be the sort of flashiest type, but you just inherently understand and recognize that this is an important player. This is a number one defenseman. And so with Faber, he has that DNA. This is a number one defenseman. And another prospect that LA is probably kicking themselves for letting go. Although, you know, circumstances are the circumstances. To me, Faber is a true number one defenseman in really like the vein of like a Charlie McAvoy. He kind of does it all. And so whereas Harley, I think is, to me, like Faber is the best kind of generalist, like that Drew Doughty type, whereas Harley is more of a specialist. And I don't think specialists get those kind of contracts. That doesn't mean I think Harley is incapable of playing that potential role. I mean, this is somebody that sometimes I feel like, hey, he should be on the top power play unit over Miro Heiskanen. But I think that speaks more to the different strengths that he has rather than like, oh, well, he's better than Heiskanen. That's not what I'm saying. And so when I think about like in that context, to me, like Harley is definitely not, he's absolutely an elite defenseman. I think he's easily top four. And I even think like I have this sneaking suspicion that he's basically going to be take Esa Lindell's spot. Like I can easily see in the future, Heiskanen on the left in the top and then Harley on the left in the second pair. So Harley has got all the makings of a top four defenseman. I just don't think he's, for one, he's, you know, a little bit, you know, less experienced. Well, they have like similar experience, but I just don't think that Harley is quite there yet. And that's why a bridge deal makes sense. And even if we were talking about like, this is like peak Harley, which is great news for Dallas. There's just something a little bit different to a player that can play all situations and excel in all three zones, whether it's on the power play, whether on the PK, and Harley's just not that guy yet.
It's interesting because many will say that the LA Kings got fleeced, but at the same time, it made sense for Minnesota to get rid of who they did in Kevin Fiala because they couldn't afford him and they got Faber in return. But at the same time, I mean, let's have a real conversation. Kevin Fiala, while he's not Brock Faber, has fared very well for the LA Kings. You look, he came off a Minnesota year with 85 points, but since being traded to the LA Kings, 72 and 73 points. So Kevin Fiala has been a real good player for LA. I'm not saying he's Brock Faber or the potential's there, but Fiala has many years left. And I think he's been a good fit for LA as well.
Well, not only that, I mean, you want to definitely kind of also consider a position, right? So LA didn't have room for a right shot defender. They had Drew Doughty at the top. And then they had Matt Waugh behind him. Love that defenseman. Wish Dallas had gotten him, but that's neither here nor there. And then, of course, and then they have one of the best defensive prospects in the game in Brant Clark, who absolutely needs to be playing. And they have a solid right shot defender in Jordan Spence. The LA was, I don't think it was like a bad trade or anything like that. They got a lot of value, and Faber was never. It would have been hard for Faber to do what he's doing in Minnesota that he could do in LA. But different scenario for sure. It's still tough in retrospect, right? It's still the kind of thing, that sort of, I'm sure LA Kings fans are like, maybe we would prefer like Faber over, over Fiala, who has been fantastic. And I think one of the more underrated forwards in hockey.
All right. So salary cap, a lot of people care about it. Are we talking a bridge deal would probably be somewhere around 5.56?
I think so. Like Evolve in Hockey has their contract projections and the I know that for Harley, 3.9 on 2 years is the projected, I'm going to totally look it up real quick.
Done deal. I'll take it.
Is projected, but I know that there are two other possibilities that they have, which is 3 years, 4.8 million, and then 6 years, 6.3. Now, these are just, again, projections. Given what Dallas's cap situation looks like, they could theoretically do that six-year deal. But to me, like, the two-year deal makes the most sense given where Dallas is going to be at once Ben Lindell's contracts are off the books. And at that point, the only question, the only worry is, what your raise is going to be for someone like Wyatt Johnston. And I think Stankoven is the year after. And I think Bork is actually up for, is going to be an RFA the year next year, the same time as Johnston. So I think, yeah, the bridge deal makes the most sense. I think you still have to, a bridge deal can absolutely backfire though too. We saw this with Darnell Nurse, right? If Edmonton doesn't do that, if they don't do that bridge deal, then they never have to pay Nurse at the peak, right? I mean, he had like a pretty big year as a result of that deal. And so when it ended, has a big year. And then they're kind of forced. I mean, granted, nobody forced them. But usually when that happens, you have a defenseman who's relatively young, has a big year. Even the good GMs just kind of fall susceptible to that familiarity bias. And they're like, well, he's our guy. He could totally get better. And hey, got to pay him what he's worth. And he's definitely not worth $9+ million. But I think given how Jim Neal has managed the cap, they'll be okay with a bridge deal. But it's hard, man. It's difficult to kind of, I think to me, Harley has proven himself. Like I would prefer to see the deal that Brock Faber got. And by the way, for those that don't know, the projected cap for Harley, if he got 8 years, is $7.3 million. So I ask you, Gavin, is $7.3 million for 8 years worth it for Thomas Harley?
Not for me personally. Ooh. And people are going to disagree. And I understand, and I could be wrong. Here's why. Once again, people are going to disagree. I need to see Thomas Harley prove that what happened toward the end of the season and in the playoffs was a fluke, not the norm. I'm not saying it won't be a good deal if they sign it for 7.3, but the Thomas Harley that I saw during the playoffs gave me some concern. I am completely in the minority on this. And some people, he could be the next coming. But at the same time, if I'm going to lock someone up for 7 years, I need to wait a little bit.
I saw fire in the eyes. That was a quick answer. So you seem genuine, and I was actually kind of surprised.
I think I'm the only one that thinks this. I really am, and I'm okay with that. I'm willing because I've spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I am not down on Thomas Harley the player. Really, really liked him. Loved his regular season. But when teams kind of focused on him and the rink kind of got smaller, it might have been because this was truly Harley's first full season in the NHL. So maybe he got worn down, especially, after facing Vegas and Colorado in the playoffs. I'm just being overprotected based on the salary cap restraints that the Stars have. That at this point, that's why I think a bridge deal would be better.
I mean, that's really, I love hearing like a sincere, well thought out hot take, because it definitely is a hot take. I think if you ask most fans, I think they would say that, as you recognize, of course, I think they would say that, hey, he proved himself in the playoffs last year, had a great regular season. And then I would actually argue, I do disagree with you about Harley's playoffs this year.
Understand.
Now, was he productive? No. And I do think that that's something to monitor, right? Which is that, I think he only had, 2 points, which is totally bizarre. Or it's 4 points. It was just some ridiculous, meager amount. But the point is, I do think that I felt especially within the first two series, Harley really seemed to focus on his defense. And I thought played really well defensively. Now, can you say that like part of that was, well, he was kind of carried first by Heiskanen and then Chris Tanev? You know, if you're going to have a defensive partner, you can't really ask for much better. And so for him to like not produce with presumably ideal circumstances, I think is absolutely something that like a potential red flag. And so I think you're right to be skeptical about 7.3 million per year, right? I mean, because again, that's what we're talking about, right? If he gets a max deal, we're talking about 7.3. They're not going to do it. And of course, Dallas would still need to make room if they did, but I can totally see that argument. I think for me, though, I think what Harley offers is so unique that I would absolutely do it. I would do it because what I see when I look at Harley is you have essentially a fixed Jake Gardner, brilliant skater, effortless, who you know can do whatever it is that he wants to do offensively. And yet the defensive game has pretty much developed exactly the way that I would want a defenseman's defense to develop, where just really, really smooth at breaking out of the zone. He doesn't necessarily panic whenever he's pressured. And because of his edge work, he can get out of corners. And that's just not necessary. He doesn't get boxed in like a lot, like even puck movers like Lundqvist and Honka. Right, for all of their offensive talent, like these were players that couldn't really leverage those offensive talents in the defensive zone the way that Harley can. So I would personally do it, but I absolutely see the argument that, hey, you know, let's learn some more before backing up the Brinks truck.
You know, you could run into a Dallas Cowboys situation where you wait too long and you see contracts like Faber, where the money keeps going up and up, and then you're costing yourself more in the future. And that's what great GMs do. They anticipate the player and they anticipate that it's going to get even better. That's what Bill Guerin in Minnesota is doing with Faber, saying we have not yet seen the ceiling. So he feels as though this is truly going to be a great deal.
By the way, and that's what Neil did with Klingberg.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yep, absolutely. And the way they played that Klingberg contract out proved to be right. I mean, kind of, when you think about it.
No, 100%. It's whenever Klingberg is just mentioned in and of itself, it's just kind of, it's unfortunate how that ended, but it's hard to believe that essentially an agent kind of botched it all in Dallas's favor.
Yeah, no, it is. And there was a little part of me that kind of was hoping the Stars would sign Klingberg as like a sixth defenseman, just because like John Klingberg was good for this organization and John Klingberg took the high road a lot, and his teammates really liked him, and when he needed to, he stood up there and answered questions. And so, you know, and wanted to be in Dallas. I will always appreciate that about John Klingberg. So, you know, I hope that John Klingberg can bounce back. If he can't, it was a really good run for a player that, David, you really watched the minors. He kind of came out of nowhere, right? This was not like a player that was all of a sudden, you know, wow, John Klingberg's the next. It wasn't like we were keeping an eye on him like Maverick Bork or Logan Stankoven or Liam Bixel.
I will say for prospect nerds, Klingberg did have some hype, but no, nobody thought like he could do like what he did in the AHL. Like people need to remember, like he was basically a point per game player in the AHL. Mm-hmm. Like that's like Brant Clark stuff. And like everybody is more or less in agreement that Clark is one of the best defensive prospects outside of the NHL. Like I am always going to be fond of Klingberg, and I agree with you. Bringing Klingberg back as a sixth defenseman makes way more sense than bringing back Nils Lundqvist.
I agree.
And we do not have to have this discussion, which I'm sure you've already like had on the show again. I mean, I think we even talked about this. It's absolutely nuts, just nuts for everyone involved, whether it's Lundqvist, his agent, or Dallas.
Yeah.
But See, look at that. Now I want to talk about Lundqvist.
Well, it's just so funny because John and I were talking about this. Like, we can question the stars and Jim Nill and everything like that, but we really need to focus on Nils Lundqvist camp and like, what's the reason for coming back to Dallas? And he might just genuinely like it here, and that's why.
So he takes, I mean, well, Dallas still has to accept the deal. I mean, like, it's not, Lundqvist, you know, what I think is going to make us all look absolutely foolish is if Lundqvist adds another 15 pounds of muscle, and this time it's actually relevant, and he looks great. Yeah. And it's just, and all of a sudden, like, it's going to make Jim Nill look like a genius. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. I think we have a good sample size of data that says it's not even about like Lundqvist being bad. It's just about the situation and circumstance and the fact that like you have a coaching staff that just simply does not trust him. And for him to develop that trust within such a short amount of time is also unfair to the player. I do think it's interesting thinking about him in terms of, hey, if Dallas wants, they could have a strict and pure uncut left right shot balance. They could go with Heiskanen with Dumba, Harley with Lyubushkin, and Lindell with Lundqvist, who does have experience with each other. So, I mean, I'm totally rooting for it. I mean, if it happens, it's just going to be absolutely mind-blowing, and the amount of people just eating crow, myself included, would be great. Will it? No.
And let's just get back to Harley for a second. At the time when the Esa Lindell contract at just over $6 million was signed, everyone thought that, you know, let's betting on the future. I think there's a pretty good case to be made. Prior to TANF arriving, a lot of people questioned that contract over the last year and a half.
Were you talking about Esa Lindell?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because what was clear, and I realize like some people will disagree, and this is where perhaps you can disagree with me, but when TANF came in, Heiskanen, Hart, and this is in the context of a defenseman that is impactful in all three zones. I think Lindell was number four. I think Heiskanen, Harley, Tanev, these were your three best defensemen.
Yes.
And so that much money going to your fourth best, however good you think he is, I think it's just like a little too much. But I agree with you. I think that to me is maybe like why. By the way, that's like a completely separate topic, right? Like,
it is
Lindell's last year. And I think that's something that like nobody's talking about, which I think is fascinating because I can never tell whether Lindell is like incredibly valuable and I'm just an idiot and don't notice like the nuances of his defensive game, or hey, just like we said goodbye to Klingberg, let's say goodbye to Lindell. Let's make this like just thematically appropriate and end of an era.
Yeah. Well, at some point they got to get Bixel in. So whether that means Dumba's here for a short time or Lindell goes, you have some contracts coming up, which leads me to the next player that I wanted to talk about in a, I would say, kind of surprising twist. Many pundits thought it was just a matter of time before 25-year-old Martin Natchez was traded from the Carolina Hurricanes to another team. Today, he signs a 2-year, $13 million contract, 6.5 per year. And I bring this up because he's 25, Wyatt Johnston's 21, so a big 4-year difference, which is a lot of time in the NHL. Natchez, over the past 2 years, 71 points, 53 points this year. So Carolina, very nice piece in Carolina. But I look at that 6.5 figure, and I think Wyatt Johnston's camp is kind of salivating at a number like that, because to me, that at least is the starting point. And by the time this contract gets discussed, I mean, we could be talking about Wyatt Johnston signing, if it's not a bridge, a Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn-like $9 million contract per year.
So you think they're going to give Johnston more than Robertson and Hintz?
Yes.
Ooh, man, I was not expecting that. I think, you know, the Natchez deal is, I think actually a really tidy bit of business by Tulski, because they already like know that this is a player that may be gone, a player that, you know, has kind of expressed, you know, desire to kind of play elsewhere. And there's the expectation that like he could be traded at any point. So a 2-year deal is fantastic in a league where the cap is going up. So it gives them leeway to be like, hey, if for some reason he just goes next level next year, great. We'll have value because that's a player that can contribute to our cup aspirations. And you know, like not everything has to last forever. You know, it's like one of the things that I think it tends to be, it can be the thing that usually, or that can hurt GMs, which is you have a player that's contributing at a high level and you feel like you just have to keep that as long as possible. And, you know, there are other great players and there are other great young players and great old players. You know, there's always some way to replace what you've lost if you're just smart enough. And so I think with Natchez, I think it was a great deal because it allows them to basically have a player that can contribute, but also a player that can trade if need be.
Yeah.
And that's a completely reasonable cap hit. Any team would absolutely just salivate at the thought of getting a young, talented player that is still extremely productive, and knowing that they have at least like another year if, say, worst case scenario, you know, they decide to like deal them after the end of the year. But I don't necessarily think it's instructive for Johnston. I think because with Natchez, you have a player that, even though I don't think he's reached his potential, I think this is a player that, you know, Carolina's system is kind of famous for restricting the offensive ceiling of players, just the way Brendan Moore's system is run. And that's not like a criticism, just that you tend to see players and their offensive ceiling limited. You know, you look at also another player like Svechnikov.
Yeah.
And Corey Schneider, who always writes absolutely great stuff about the Hurricanes, kind of written about, you know, how that system has kind of, you know, dulled their impact, at least in terms of production in some ways. But for me, Natchez, even though maybe he's a 90 point player, I think he absolutely has the talent to do that. I think he's still a relatively like kind of single layered player. He's mostly about kind of offensive zone pressure and a rush attack, whereas Johnston is, you know, he's got that offensive potential. Although I don't necessarily think Johnston will ever be a consistent 80, 90, 100 point player. I think you're looking at someone that's between the 60 to 80 range because he doesn't cheat. Natchez, on the other hand, does cheat. And I think that's why Johnston's value is going to be insane, because he really is a great three zone player already. It's part of why we love him, right? Which is that he's everything we could have asked for and then some. And in some ways, it's already kind of like their top center.
Yeah, well, here's why I thought it was a good comparison, because we are talking about two restricted free agents. And 6.5 to me, you know, good deal for Carolina, but that 6.5 number for a restricted free agent, you know, that's the way it's going now as teams find these players more valuable and the cap going up, like you mentioned. So that's kind of why I saw that, because I have my eyes on this Wyatt Johnston deal. And now to me, that's a player you lock up for the 8 years. And the only reason I think it's worth more, once again, I'll bring up the Dallas Cowboys. It's not necessarily a comparable on player to player in that Johnston, if he gets more, does that mean he's better than Hintz? Does that mean he's better than Robertson? To me, it's the cap going up and the percentage of the players getting paid more. And therefore, when a player signs, it's like Tua Tagovailoa. Is he better than Dak Prescott in football? No, he's not. But why did he get paid so much? Because other quarterbacks signed. So when his turn's up, he's going to go. And then Dak Prescott will go above him. And then another quarterback will go above Dak Prescott. So it's not necessarily what happens on ice. It more has to do with timing.
Yeah, and hopefully it didn't sound like I was like trying to like cap snipe you with like, oh, this, what are you comparing those two? Like anybody that's like unfamiliar with like Natchez's game, like absolutely like should be. He to me, he reminds me of like Ehlers 2.0, who is a player that if Winnipeg had actually given proper minutes to and not screwed up, like you're talking about like a 100-point player. And I think Nate just kind of reminds me of Ehlers at times, not to say that like, you know, he's going to hit that, but even though I think Johnson's a more complete player, I do think Nate just has the potential to outproduce him pretty consistently. He's that talented. So yeah, no, I don't think your comparison is off at all. I just think, I think it's that added dimension. And I sometimes wonder about negotiations themselves and what exactly teams use in contrast to the agents as data in support of, hey, you think you're this, but you're not. Do fancy stats get used? Do they look at spreadsheets and not the games, Gavin?
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand what you're saying. No, that completely makes sense. Did want to point out Ilya Samsonov signs with the Vegas Golden Knights. It was a few weeks back, but I wanted to bring it up because that's a pretty good 1-2 combo now in Vegas that the Stars will be fighting for position with Adin Hill and Ilya Samsonov.
Yeah, it's a solid deal. I think Samsonov had a stretch where he looked like he was about to just wash out in Toronto, and it looked awful. And then somehow kind of refound, you know, his game, however brief. And I thought it actually looked pretty good in the playoffs. I don't know why Toronto fans gave him grief over that Pastrnak goal that eliminated the Maple Leafs, because to me, that like it was a combination of so many things between the speed of the play, the speed of Pastrnak, the sheer talent, shooting talent of Pastrnak, and then just bad defense on Toronto's part to let a guy just go from coast to coast completely unhindered. So I did not think that goal was on him, but you saw a lot of Toronto fans like giving grief over that. But yeah, it's Vegas is interesting because they're either that goaltender is either going to be like good enough for them to like make one last crack at a shot of the cup, or it's not, and then they just slowly start to finally. We've said it for years; they're going to hit a wall. They can't do this forever, and they always find a way, but. It's hard, man. It's hard when, you know, your best players are like Mark Stone and Alex Petrangelo, and they're just like held up by like duct tape and like chewing gum.
Right. And finally, David, last word on sports. I always find this fascinating. Best Dallas Stars by sweater number 1 through 10. You ready?
What? Okay. Yeah.
Number one, Gump Worsley. Give me your breakdown on Gump.
Wait, what? Oh, okay. So we're talking about
we're talking about players that wore the jersey number.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Goaltender. Number two, Darian Hatcher. Number three, Craig Ludwig.
What?
Number four. This is their jersey number.
Okay.
Wearing the number four, Craig Hartsburg. Number five, Daryl Sador. Number six, Trevor Daley. Number seven, in the rafters, Neil Broughton. Number eight, in the rafters, Bill Goldsworthy. Number nine, in the rafters, Mike Modano. Number 10, newest Stars Hall of Famer, Brendan Morrow.
All right. All right. Not too bad. I don't have like terribly strong opinions other than who is Craig Ludwig's competition at number three?
John Klingberg.
Oh, I would absolutely have Klingberg over him. How dare is that you. Sacrilege?
How dare you, sir?
I mean, you know, to be fair, like Ludwig did win a cup.
Yes.
Not
17 years in the league.
But man, it's you know, it's when you put those names together, then maybe I am sort of like pro. Hey, you know, like every team should have their own like Hall of Fame. Because a lot of those guys, just fantastic. Like Hatcher, one of my favorite players. Matt Tkachuk was 24, right?
Yes.
Okay, so well past. Dang. All right.
I believe so. Yeah.
I'm really trying hard to think about like all the sort of also-rans that were like in competition with these players because I'll never forget John Sim for some reason.
Yep. That's a good one.
He had one of those weird numbers, like 49 or something like silly like that. But I'll never forget John Sim for just having kind of like one of the best hockey smiles. Most of them are pretty good. You think about like John Klingberg. I mean, John Sim like had almost kind of like a sloth thing going. Like he wasn't missing his two front teeth, but like he was. I love the guy. I don't know why. There are always those players for me, the sort of journeyman that kind of like came and went, even though Sim was kind of a prospect, you know, when he was kind of growing up. But like I always think of Rob DiMaio. I loved him as a player. Also knocked down Jim Cummings in a fight. He was well out of his weight class, and I just wanted to mention that. You were talking about fighting the other day, weren't you? Hockey.
I was. Yeah, I did a. So it was interesting because it's kind of like a fan vote because fans voted on the fights, but it's fascinating. The Stars did not drop the mitts for too many tilts. However, they were among the highest percentage, second to Philadelphia as far as fights won.
Man, I'm trying hard to think about. I mean, because
they won. Hockenpah
got
fights.
Destroyed by Nick Seeler. I remember that fight. I'm trying to think of like.
I actually thought the one that they lost, that they called it was going to be a loss, was the first game of the season where Nicholas Hague and Jamie Benn went at it.
You know, that's like that part is part of my issue with like a lot of the stuff, which is that hockey fights nowadays, listen, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago, if a hockey fight broke out, it was just an absolute, as Razor would say, punch in the face contest. No defense, just strict. What is it? He also says five knuckle meat soothing. But I mean, those are legit like barn burn, legit. Yeah. Toe-to-toe fights. Nowadays, it's just like they grab each other and kind of wrestle, and then they fall to the ice, and that's pretty much it. And I hate to sound like the Don Cherry purist that I've always loathed to be, but I'm just going to say, like, you know, listen, like, if somebody complains about, oh, why do you want to get rid of fighting in hockey? That's not fighting. That is not fighting what goes down nowadays. Every now and then, you have, like, a great scrap. I'm trying to think of like the one that Mattias Janmark had a great fight with Blake Coleman a couple of years, maybe it was last year or the year before. And I'm like, I was not familiar with your game, as the meme goes.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. By the way, also wearing number one for the Dallas Stars, Johan Edberg.
Is it weird? I don't know who that is.
Wow, 2005, 2006. So he backed up. Who did he back up? But he was really good, and I believe he went to the Atlanta Thrashers after that.
There was like a small window, like when I was in college, where I did not follow the Dallas Stars at all.
He did? Yeah, he did. He went to the Atlanta Thrashers, a two-year contract. Yeah, he was the backup for Kari Lehtinen.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's we should do a podcast just on random Stars names like Alex Auld or Richard Bachman or
Aaron Downey. I don't think he's that random, though. I think people remember him just for the Jesse Buller's KO.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you're right. Tobias Stefan, Darcy Wakalak, you know, I mean, just.
Oh, do you know this one? Like, I will send you my magic collection if you get this one.
Okay.
If you genuinely know this one, Mel Engelstad.
Mel Engelstad?
I knew you wouldn't get it. Yes. Gotcha. So he was your classic like goon in the 90s. I think he played maybe like one or two games for Dallas and actually fought Bob Probert. You can find it on YouTube.
Wow.
I always love that name though too. It's great.
Yeah, no, that is definitely one. All right, David. Four people, they want to follow D Magazine because of your article tomorrow in which you talk about the Stars defense. And just a little preview, you tell people, don't panic, right?
Yeah, it's, you know, my main thing is, you know, this is kind of like, it's not a part two to the whole sort of the Moneyball piece where just kind of if you add it up, you know, these kind of, in this case, fancy stats, that Dallas was essentially better. You know, this is essentially kind of, well, if we think about what it is that drives Dallas and their success, the blue line has never been it. And insofar as it's been, they've been a very good defensive team. They've been a very good defensive team with and without Tanev. And this has been going on for many, many years, ever since Jim Montgomery's first season. And so I think my kind of really like the sort of the core of my argument is that, like, well, Dallas has been a great defensive team, a team defensive team, for a really long time. And that's not going to change just because they got worse than the version that was with Tanev, but better than the one that started last year. And so if we think of Dallas's blue line as just simply support for the real thing that is going to, that is driving Dallas' success, which is their offense, Hintz playing up to the level he can, Robertson maybe, you know, getting a little bit better, Johnson and Stankoven getting better, you know, Bork, Ixel. I mean, that's going to be how they win. And the perfect example of kind of what I'm talking about is Florida's defense. I mean, would anybody look at Florida's defensive squad individually and think, man, that's a great blue line? No. And so I think Dallas has potential to kind of do something like that, where as long as they can just establish chemistries and those chemistries can just not get in the way and help support what is their best weapon, which is their offensive depth and their especially their top six, then yeah, the blue line's not really going to be, my personal prediction, I don't think the blue line is going to be the talk of the town despite getting worse.
Yeah, I like it. I'm looking forward to reading it.
Thank you.
Yeah, and no, absolutely. And as always, you can subscribe to David's Substack, which is at StarStack. And as he mentioned, you can just follow it on Twitter as well, StarStack. He is the great David Castillo. And I would also encourage people, we have a couple of interviews that we did in the last couple of weeks. Al Montoya was fantastic.
Yes, I've heard that, by the way. I think I plugged it on Twitter.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Anyways, great stuff.
Yeah, he was great. And I love the story of a Cuban American born in Chicago, wanting to play goalie and just finding his way, and the stories and the players that he played against and played with, and just his story as far as being the first player to hoist up a gold medal for Team USA in the World Juniors, and Ryan Suter was in front of him on defense. Zach Parise was on that team. So many good players on that team. But, you know, that was really cool, him bringing back those memories. And then he gets drafted to the New York Rangers, and he's ready to go. And all of a sudden, seventh overall, and here comes a guy named Henrik Lundqvist. So that began Al's career jumping around with stops in Florida, Winnipeg, Montreal, New York Islanders, New York Rangers. Now he's come to the Dallas Stars and really a community outreach program, and he's doing a great job. And just a lovely gentleman. So that was really good. And then the other day we spoke to Hannah Bilka, and I can't say enough about Hannah. And it's so cool that we have one of the best female players in the world, drafted fourth overall in the PWHL. Her upside is tremendous, and she'll be playing for Boston this year, just signed a multi-year deal. She is summering right now in the beautiful suburb called Capel, and it was great to spend a couple of minutes with Hannah talking about this upcoming season. So a couple of real good podcasts to check out this summer, and we'll have more interviews to come. David, once again, you're a beast. Thank you so much for joining and supporting us, my friend.
No, man. Thank you. And I feel like I was going to plug something of yours, but now I can't remember.
No, it's all right, man. The fact that people are still listening to this in the off season and gravitating toward this, I love your feedback. If you get a chance and you say, hey, can you do a program on this? Shoot us a note. We're happy to talk about it later this week. Sean Shapiro will join us. We're going to keep producing these podcasts with new and interesting topics. We'll get into Sean about some of the things happening around the NHL. So that'll be real good as well. But it's great to have David as a staple of this program. He's always so great with us. So for David Castillo, I'm Gavin Spittle. Thank you once again for listening to Spits and Suds. Another episode dropping soon right here on 105.3 The Fan. Have a great day, everyone.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Why does this room look amazing? What'd you change?
Oh, I just got these custom shades from Blinds.com. It's all online, so it's really easy. Great price, too.
Ugh, I remember shopping for Blinds. I waited around all day just to get a quote.
Hi, sorry I'm late. I know you said just the bedroom, but what do you feel about this?
I feel
bathroom?
Like I had to say yes, just to get rid of her.
All right, just go ahead and sign here and we'll get everything
taken
care of.
It took forever. And the worst part, hidden fees. How about you?
I chatted with my Blinds.com design consultant on my time, got free samples, and it was all super high quality at a great price. Plus, they make it easy to DIY or add installation like I did.
Blinds.com sounds way better.
Way better. And everything comes with their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Plus, check this out. I can control them from my phone.
Whoa, magic.
There's a better way. Shop Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.